Thank you for coming back. I think we are more refreshed to resume with our discussion. But I also think that it is important to explain why it is important for us to move from a common point of view and and respond to issues appropriately. Our understanding as the portfolio committee is that when the department reports to the portfolio committee on quarterly expenditure, to give us a quarterly report, we are not necessarily focusing on the budget in isolation to the program that was led by the department. And when we look at the expenditure, and we come across under expenditure, we then do not just look at under expenditure. We view that as underperformance. Because a budget is a financial implication of a program. And if then there is under expenditure, what that implies is that there is underperformance. Unfortunately, for today, we don't have both the DG and the CFO. We do have Mr. Pretorius as the acting CFO, and we think that you have presented to us the financial implications, and what you have presented to us actually paints a picture of what is happening in the department in terms of performance. What you have also presented to us does paint a picture of how the department implements its programs. It also paints a picture of whether the department is a department that dirties its hands in doing the work, or it's a department that coordinates. Other structures that actually do the work. We're able to see that from what has been presented. And I think that the second bite of questions and comments are comments that should seek to drive the department. Firstly, give members an opportunity to say that in their view, in their view, it is correct or not correct for the department to play a coordination role. And that would also be informed by a thorough assessment by the portfolio committee of value for money. If I may just make one example, the question asked by Honorable Gell relates mainly to when she asked a question about a rural road, relates to the three challenges that the state president referred to in SONA. It's not a new subject, it is just that the state president raised that issue sharply and in a very simple language for everybody to understand what the government is responding to. The government of today is responding to, one, the type of South Africa it inherited. A country that has got two worlds in one. Country that has got a first world and a third world. And it's not a new issue. It is an issue that has been raised many, many, many times, but not as simple as it was raised in the SONA. It was raised in the presidential budget vote last year. It was raised even by the former president. Uneven levels of development in our country. And the need for us to respond to those and allocate resources to address those uneven levels of development. So the question that Honorable Ngel is asking in terms of a rural road is based on the fact that rural communities and urban communities, in terms of our constitution, have equal rights. And our constitution is based on non-discrimination on the basis of race, color, creed, gender, religion, and geographical location. That is what the Constitution says. Now, when it comes to transport, it means that the Department of Transport has got a responsibility of examining the inequalities that exist in our country in terms of transport and come up with policies that would reduce those inequalities. I want to again repeat that last year in the House, I asked a specific question to the minister. What is the strategy of the department for upgrading rural gravel roads? In line with the definition of transport as a heartbeat for socio-economic development, the response given was that we have a policy in this country that says for a gravel road in the rural areas to be upgraded, you first need to have 200 cars that are using that road. That was the response. And we agree that that is the existing policy. But the question is that policy incongruent with the definition of transport? If the role of transport is to facilitate social and economic development in underdeveloped areas, what should then be done by the department with a policy that does not make us use transport to unlock underdevelopment and to reduce and eradicate underdevelopment and unlock the potential of social and economic development in underdeveloped areas? That question was asked last year. Now, let us unpack the question of Honorable Ngeth. In that question, there is a statement and an understanding that says, leafy urban suburbs where rich people live have world-class roads, tarred roads with street lights, marked roads, a pedestrian knows where to walk, there's pavement, there are road markings, and there are traffic signs. In the same country, with one constitution that guarantees equal rights to all citizens, you then moved into rural areas. Poor rural areas and poor urban townships in Newcastle, Matadel, and Oswego, roads are gravel, the township. There you find a gravel road with no street lights, unmarked roads, no pedestrian crossing, no yellow line, no traffic sign. That is what you would find. Now, when you look at the expenditure of the department, you come under policy development. And you discover that there has been under expenditure. And to us, under expenditure means under performance. And when you read that slide, it's not us, with the department that says there has been delay in policy development. There has been delay in the development of regulations. There has been delays in there are three things. Particularly on the rail. It's rail policy, there's a delay. Rail Act, there's a delay. Rail Economic Regulator, there's a delay. And I can mention a number of policies that are being delayed. The scholar transport policy, it has taken the department more than 4 years. Yet, it is a policy-making department. It is not an implementing department. It is a policy-making department. But when it comes to producing policies, the department is found wanting. Hence, we see no change in terms of redirecting resources to where they are mostly needed. This presentation is very, very important to prepare the portfolio committee for the budget review report. It is also very, very important for the portfolio committee to scrutinize where the bottlenecks are in the department. The other issue that I would want to raise is also the role of our agencies. Are our agencies physically involved in doing work, or they plan the work that needs to be done, prepare tenders, and dish out contracts? Which would then mean that we have an administrative department, and we would also have administrative agencies. When we go to other countries, we also look at how they work. When we went to China, we found state-owned enterprises that were not sitting in offices. The staff, the employees of those state-owned enterprises were actually at work. We would go to an agency equivalent to SANRAL in terms of race. And we would not meet the officials in offices. We would meet them on site. In South Africa, it is the other way around. You meet employees of agencies in the offices, and then on site you meet the contractors. Also in China, no reference was made of consultants. They talk of development of skills within government and state-owned companies. They don't talk of consultants. And then when it comes to the work that is done by consultants in our country, it is done by their education institutions and also by the engineers that are located in different state-owned enterprises, and they work, they establish a team. Then you find it very confusing in South Africa that a provincial department would have 110 consultants, one transport department, Northwest. And then you would still find the roads in the north, in Northwest, that are not of world class. When we were going on the field, the officials turned away and said they can't go with us because their cars will be stuck on the road. So departments that are supposed to be overwhelmingly staffed by engineers are dependent more on engineering consultants. That then brings us to the question of who is actually driving development. Why would we pay an official who would then look at the needs and then hire a consultant to prepare the strategy and all the and do all the planning and pay the consultant? And again, when that consultant has done that, it even advises in some cases the department which company has to be appointed to do the work and which technology is good and bad. Not even the Department of Science and Technology in our country, not even the Council for Science and Industrial Research. And I stand to be corrected through a very factual argument that would prove to me that we are not wasting money on personnel instead of programs. When I say personnel, I mean people that are employed to do the work and the consultants that they employ and the contractors that they give tenders. Then the issue of accommodation. I'm not very much interested in knowing the condition of the offices occupied by the department. I'm more interested in knowing the ownership of the property. In this sense, all governments have got limited resources. All governments. The resources of governments are far less than the needs of the communities that they serve. What then makes a sustainable government financially viable does not only come from saving. To be told that when you're supposed to eat, you don't have to eat. It comes from also being very strategic and creative in using the financial resources that are at your disposal. I want to make an example. If a municipality is a municipality that has got a revenue base that is small, but in the very same municipality, there are other departments that require to be accommodated. To me, it would be a clever move for that municipality to avail land and develop a government office precinct owned by the municipality. Have a maybe a PPP a funding model or a build, operate and transfer funding model. Invite the very private sector to develop the government office precinct and then rent as government from another sphere of government. In that way, the limited resources of government are kept rotating within government and as a result are assisting government to sustain itself. So I come from a community development background, and part of my training included development economics. Some governments even own hotels and conference centers because they know that it is them who would utilize the very same hotel, and therefore the money would rotate within government. So those are the issues that we are raising. The question from Honorable Suka is more related to the continuing, the government that, the department that is continuing to play a coordination role and not involved in the actual work. And that trend is also in the agencies. Then there was a question about the tolling. I think that the portfolio committee would need to just have a day on this issue to look at tolling of roads. Tolling of roads is a policy of government. It is operating in many countries. But what becomes an issue is the funding model and how also tolling of the decision to toll the road is initiated. And that is coupled with the response that was given in terms of municipalities that have to use their own resources to develop the infrastructure. To say, are we correct when we say we will have world-class national roads and third world municipal infrastructure? Because when we say it is the responsibility of municipalities who have no revenue base, that is exactly what we mean. We are saying we are giving you the responsibility of looking after your own transport infrastructure, even though we know that you don't have the financial capacity to improve that infrastructure. It takes us again to policies that do not speak to what we seek to achieve. Let us look at the Gauteng project. It is a provincially initiated tolling. They don't establish their own agency and give that agency powers to raise money. They shift that responsibility to a national agency, whose responsibility is to build national roads. When all is done, SANRAL goes to raise money. When all is done, all South Africans, even a person who is living in Harding, where I come from, where there are still pupils who swim across a river to get to a school because there is no bridge. All provinces have to sacrifice their allocation to bail out Gauteng. And Gauteng must have world-class facilities at the expense of other provinces. That is the issue that this committee has to talk about. We need to revisit the manner in which the tolling of roads in Gauteng was actually initiated. Yes, government could not sit back and punish the public. But at the same time, that intervention is creating uneven levels of development, because a person who is in the Eastern Cape, where there is a tree of death because there is no road that is linking the community to the hospital, has to wait for many, many years for that road to be upgraded, because money has to be shifted to bail out a province that has built world-class roads. That is what this committee should focus at and then begin to say. Can the next province do the same? And if not, what policies can then be effected at national level so that we prevent that from happening in future? So what I'm then saying is that we did not want to enter the debate in dealing with the indicators of the problem. We always want to enter the debate by dealing with the root causes of the problem. And that is the root cause of the problem. Can provinces operate as federal states? That is the question. Can provinces operate as the federal state and then later come back to the national government and expect to be bailed out? That is what we need to deal with. I want to thank the department. I don't think that the issues that I have raised need your response today, because they fall outside the chief financial officer's area of operation. They fall under the DG's area of operation and also relate to understanding the challenges that this government is trying to address, which are: one, uneven levels of development; two, poverty; three, job creation. Just those three. Lastly, we our department, the Department of Transport, is expected to appear in front of the SCOPA on the 6th at 9 o'clock. In terms of our program, on that day we were going to deal with scholar transport policy. And the manufacturing aspect of Shopagaluza. I think that we could defer that and deal with it during our workshop, because we have had some engagement, although we would have wanted to unpack. We had some engagement on that when we were dealing with the presentation that was made to us by the DG. Presented to us by the DG. so that we can attend the meeting of this COPA on the 6th of March. It builds the capacity of the portfolio committee to attend meetings of the COPA, because we begin to understand the type of questions that are asked in relation to audit reports, so that even at portfolio committee level, we can then focus on critical areas that are related to the auditor's report. But also it helps for the portfolio committee to attend those meetings, to put issues into correct perspective. Because at portfolio committee level, we would be dealing with this current year, and we would have found maybe solutions to the problem. And SCOPA is dealing with the previous financial year, and it then helps when the portfolio committee attends those meetings, because decisions may be made which may negatively affect the budget allocation if there is no explanation from the portfolio committee to which the department accounts in terms of where issues are, what interventions have been effected. The entity that will be looked at by SCOPA is the RTMC for the adverse report that they received in 2010-2011 financial year. And we know for the fact that some of the issues relating to that auditor's report have already been responded to. And we need also to clarify some of those issues. Let me take this opportunity to thank all the members and the department, as well as our researcher, for providing us with information that is very useful in terms of engaging with the department. Thank you, sir. Yes, Honorable Brother. You will be informed. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Pretoria. I declare the meeting closed.